Good Thursday afternoon, everybody. Happy NFL kickoff day. We have arrived. It is here. You can pinch yourself. You can do whatever you want to make sure that you are awake and that you are not dreaming, but I can promise you, you are not. It is the day the NFL season kicks off. And Houston, Kansas City, just in a matter of hours, will get going in Arrowhead Stadium in front of what is going to be about a 17,000-person crowd. I think it's about 22% of maximum capacity. That's what local and state governments essentially allowed Kansas City to the seats they allowed them to sell. So, it's not going to be the loudest Arrowhead's ever been, but 17,000 people, if they're passionate enough about the team, and why wouldn't they when your team's going to be celebrating a championship tonight? I think they can still make some good noise in there. So that should be fun. Hopefully everybody is safe about it and smart about it while they're in there. But ultimately, just happy to have football back. Really wasn't sure if we were going to have this day. Wasn't sure if it was going to happen, especially as preseason got canceled. And right around that point is when I started to get a little worried that maybe we wouldn't have the NFL season this year. Then, of course, college football kind of goes half and half with not playing and playing this fall. So just good to see the NFL here. The regular season has arrived, and it's been, different not having a preseason leading up to this. We really just don't have any idea what to expect from these teams. So it's going to be a week one like no other on the NFL. But ultimately, just super happy that NFL is here. The season is back. So we will talk about Thursday Night Football later on in the show, give you my prediction for that game. And then tomorrow we'll have our pals Sean and Terry over the phone in their separate segments, and we'll get them to give us their predictions. I'll give you mine as well tomorrow on playoff teams and week one predictions. I've already told you, Rick and I had a conversation last Friday about our Super Bowl prediction, but we'll get that from Terry and Sean as well. So a fun NFL day tomorrow, but we will talk Thursday Night Football later on in this show. And then, of course, NHL, and we'll start in the world of the NBA because one interesting game yesterday, and that was the Raptors and Celtics game 6. The defending champions fight off elimination in a situation that they did not have to face last season, being down 3-2 in a series. But they were able to fight back through 2 overtime periods and force a game 7. And I mean, you want to talk about a game that was a battle of attrition. I mean, each team had 4 players that played 50-plus minutes. For Toronto, Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, Kyle Lowry, and Fred VanVleet all played over 50 minutes. Anunoby was at 50 exactly. Fred VanVleet played 51. Kyle Lowry played 53. And Pascal Siakam played 54 minutes. For the Boston Celtics, they almost had all 5 starters playing 50 minutes, but Daniel Tice came just a little short playing 47. But Jason Tatum logged 51, Kemba Walker logged 52 minutes, Marcus Smart logged 50, Jaylen Brown logged 51. So it was it's one of those games where it's going to take a lot out of you, and it's going to feel a lot better to win it than to lose it. Talk about that Tampa Bay Columbus playoff game in their playoff series in the NHL where it went to 5 overtimes. I mean, Columbus just mentally never really looked the same throughout the rest of that series. And for Boston to be on the brink of moving to the Eastern Conference Final and to lose it there in kind of the waning moments or just kind of throughout the second overtime period, that I think is going to be a big swing for Toronto. And now, I mean, anything can happen in Game 7. Not to say that Boston won't be able to bounce back and win the series, or that Toronto won't be able to build on this win like they did after their Game 3 win and possibly put 2 wins back-to-back again and possibly win this games. But it should be, I expect Game 7 to be right around the same place that Game 6 was, back and forth, pretty tight, maybe goes into overtime as well. But nonetheless, that was a crazy game yesterday between those two teams, as this series has been. You expect a 2-versus-3 seed series to be like this, to be back and forth, to be cutthroat. We had the lopsided win there from Boston in Game 5, but really, Toronto and the wins that they've gotten besides kind of the Game 3 prayer there at the buzzer, Games 4 and Game 6 have been really kind of solid wins for Toronto. And I think the conversation again after Game 5 was Toronto's now missing that star piece that would take over in this time of the playoffs, when like down late, or if you're down in the series and need someone to step up. But again, it's been kind of team basketball, and Kyle Lowry kind of led the way with 33 points last night, but Fred VanVleet with 21 as well. Norman Powell with 23 points coming off the bench, a strong performance from him. Not just with 23 points, but 8 of 9 from the free throw line. I mean, nobody else on the team there for Toronto got close to that that amount of free throws in the game. Norman Powell, 8 for 9, including 2 there in double overtime that put him up 125 to 122. Although, did not agree with him taking the possible game winner at the end of the first overtime period. I get it. He's a good scorer and a solid scorer for you, but in that case, that's when you turn to your stars. And as nice of a game as Norman Powell had, he is not the star of that team. I don't want to see Norman Powell taking the buzzer beater at overtime to try and win the game. Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet, those are your first two options. Marc Gasol was even stroking a little bit from beyond three-point line. He went 2 for 4 in yesterday's game. So I would even want him to maybe take a three-pointer before Norman Powell does. I mean, it just didn't seem like the right guy to step up in that moment and try and take a shot. I don't think they need to get kind of too overzealous with that. I mean, I think OG Anunoby's three-pointer may have factored into, hey, if someone's open, hit him. But Norman Powell just doesn't seem like that kind of guy. So wasn't too sure about that choice to take the game-winning shot there in overtime, but obviously didn't hurt Toronto as they were able to go on to win that game 125 to 122. And Kyle Lowry, I mean, talked about the big minutes logged by everybody, but he played the entire second half again, the third time that he has done that in the last four games. And really, I mean, Kyle Lowry, I feel like when DeMar DeRozan was there, when Kawhi Leonard was there, he was always that second fiddle. And even though they've played some really great team basketball this year, I think it was supposed to be kind of Kyle Lowry's team this year. So to see him be the leading scorer, to again, for the third time in four games, play the entire second half and be out there for pretty much all of overtime as well, it was that's the kind of performance you want to see from essentially the new star, or the star of this year for that team. Nothing against Fred VanVleet or Pascal Siakam, but I feel like Kyle Lowry, you know, it was supposed to be his year to kind of captain that team throughout the season. I think he did a great job of it in this game. And the Raptors, again, even with some of those big minutes, Boston too, but Toronto shot 6 for 7 in that second overtime period, really helping them get propelled to that victory. For the Boston Celtics, Jaylen Brown, 18 shots in the first half, the most by a Celtics player in the first half since Antoine Walker did it back in November of 2002. Coincidentally enough, also against Toronto. But Boston also not with a great record since 2008, when it has had a chance to close out a series. They are now 17-22 when trying to close out a series. And not that it was sloppy mistakes coming down the end there for Boston. I mean, just one or two turnovers here and there. I mean, the Jaylen Brown turnover when he mistakenly took Coach Nurse there for Toronto as one of his teammates and kind of threw it over at him. Although Nick Nurse was very, very close to being actually on the floor when Jason Tatum threw him that ball. I mean, I got nothing against a coach being up against the court like that and, you know, being kind of intense with his players when they're on defense. But, I mean, he was close to having a foot on the court when Jaylen Brown threw him that ball. So, I mean, Jason Tatum threw him that ball. It's not that I'm blaming Nick Nurse or anything like that, but that's – I always kind of, you know – in that situation, it seems a little suspicious when the coach is just kind of standing there almost literally right on the floor, especially when they're down towards the corner like that where you would expect a teammate maybe to be standing. But you know what? That's part of the game. That's part of the strategy. And if Nick Nurse kind of quote-unquote planned it, then it worked. It got the team the ball back, and they were able to make the most of it there. But an interesting moment as well between Nick Nurse and Kyle Lowry there at the end of really the end of the game. As Boston tried to tie it with a three-pointer, they couldn't get it. The ball goes out of bounds, and Nick Nurse calls a timeout to move the ball from underneath their own basket, which is where it would have been, up towards half court. But Kyle Lowry was not happy with that call because it felt like it gave the officials time to review it and they could have given the ball back to Boston. Although there was a little bit of a review that went on, possession stay with Toronto. They essentially got the ball in, and that is what it is. A little bit of tension there after the game, but I agree with Kyle Lowry in his post-game comments. Not a whole lot to read into there. Just two teams now both fighting for their season with the series tied 3-3, and that's an emotional, hard-fought game six. So, yeah, you know what? Tempers run a little high, but that's just the way it goes in the playoffs. So I agree with Kyle Lowry. Nothing really to read into there. I mean, if this has been happening throughout the series, then yeah, maybe, but we haven't really seen anything like that when the two teams kind of get together and are almost squaring up to each other after the game. So I would agree with Kyle. Nothing really to read into there. But now going into Game 7, these are two teams that have very different Game 7 histories. The Celtics will be playing in a Game 7 for the 33rd time in their franchise history. They are 23-9 all time, but have lost four of their last seven Game 7s. So they haven't had the most recent success in this situation. However, I feel like this team is just not built the same as some of those other teams they've had. I mean, the other stat was since 2008 in terms of closing out series. But really, I think this team is pretty well balanced, and Game 7 isn't really going to affect the way their offense operates and how they choose to go about it. I think they're going to be looking for their stars and are going to be, you know, passing the ball around, giving everybody opportunities like they have been. But for Toronto, this is only going to be their sixth Game 7 in their franchise history, and they are 3-2 in Game 7. So both team with a winning record, but Toronto hasn't even played in as many Game 7s as Boston has lost. Let that sink in for a little bit. But an interesting stat as well. Obviously, neutral court, right? They're in the bubble, although we still have official home and official away teams. But technically, the road team has dominated this series. Both teams are 0-3 as the home team. And obviously, Toronto is scheduled to be the home team for Game 7. So that could also play a little bit into Boston's favor. That Game 7 is tomorrow night between the two. In the other game last night, the Clippers and the Nuggets. And Denver, not to say that they entered this series with an empty tank, but I would say that that tank is pretty much empty now. I mean, this is just a team that, I mean, really from the outset in game four, just did not look up to the challenge. They had a nice second quarter and a way more competitive second half. But that first quarter, I mean, they just looked drained. They looked drained, and really they looked drained in the last 7-8 minutes of that game as well. Because really this lead got up to about 18-17, I think up at one point to 19 points for Los Angeles. And Denver looked like they were going to be out of it after that first quarter. Ended up going on a bit of a nice run there. I think it was right around 10 points at halftime, maybe a little less. But the Clippers then, you know, about at the 9-minute mark remaining in the third quarter, just started to open up that gap again, and Denver really never able to close it back down after that run there at the end of the first half and just into the second half. So LA, I think, you know, just too much for Denver. And as much as I wanted this series to be like the Denver-Utah series, I think that seven-game series just took too much out of Denver for them really to be able to compete with the talent of Los Angeles. I mean, even with Paul George continuing to be more cold than hot, I mean, again, just 10 points from Paul George. And the only starter he had more points than was Patrick Beverley, who had just 2 points. But every other starter, I mean, Marcus Morris, Ivan Zubac, Kawhi Leonard, all outscoring Paul George, as did Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams off the bench. I mean, they just need more from Paul George. I mean, when you're going up against a team like Denver, you can manage it, especially just because I think they're so worn out from that Utah series. But if they get to the Western Conference Finals and they're playing the Lakers, which with both teams leading their series right now, we will just assume that's going to be the Western Conference Final matchup. But if they go up against the Lakers and Paul George is having these type of performances, they're going to have a tough time holding up, because Kawhi Leonard is going to be the star. He's been the star the whole season for LA. But to be successful in the playoffs and to get past a team like the Lakers, they are going to need Paul George to do more. And really, what is disheartening to me about Paul George's performance right now, or at least in game four, zero free throw attempts from Paul George. I mean, if you're going to shoot 10 shots from the field throughout the game, I expect you to be driving to the basket, trying to get more opportunities and more, and just try to get to the line. I mean, for you to have zero free throw attempts, three of the five starters for LA did not get to the free throw line. Morris, Beverly, and George did not attempt a free throw in this game. I mean, you won by 11, but again, when you're playing the Lakers, you got to make the most of these opportunities, and you got to be aggressive. You have to be the aggressor out there. I know the three-point shot is taking over the NBA, but if it's not falling and if you're going to shoot just 10 shots, I mean, Paul George is 4 from 10 from the field in 27 minutes in game four with zero free throw attempts. Get to the basket. Force Denver to have to – I mean, they already outscored him in the paint. Make life even tougher for him. Start to draw fouls. Start to get to the free throw line. Kawhi Leonard was able to get there 8 times, made all 8. Free throws can make a difference, and if you're not going to have that kind of success shooting from the field like Paul George has struggled, get to the basket. Try to give yourself some more opportunities to get to the line and get some points. Got to be better than that, and don't turn the ball over. Paul George, 4 turnovers, and no other player on the team had more than 1. The team had 9 turnovers in game 4 last night, 4 of which came from Paul George. The other 4 starters each had 1, and Montrezl Harrell had 1. So for you to be 4 of 10 from the field, 0 free throws, and 4 turnovers, got to be better, Paul George. Got to be better. Getting away with it right now, but you got to be better when it comes to the Western Conference Finals and the NBA Finals if you want to win a championship. Because as good as Kawhi Leonard is, and as great as this team is, I mean, we haven't gotten to see LA full guns blazing it much throughout this entire season, really in the bubble. But since playoffs have started, they've been able to get more guys back there. And really throughout this series, they've had their team healthy and firing at all cylinders, especially with Patrick Beverly back now. This is a great team. But they need more from Paul George moving forward. And unfortunately, yesterday, I went 0-2. Should have known that reality was going to come crashing back down. Felt so good about my Tuesday night predictions. Was 3-0, got both from right in basketball, got my NHL prediction right, came in here feeling good. Last night, nice little piece of humble pie. Still got my NHL prediction right, but missed both NBA predictions yesterday. My pick for today, though, because we have game 4 of the Lakers and Rockets series, LA winning games 2 and 3 to take a 2-1 series lead. And I was torn about my pick with this one because I feel like the Lakers are kind of in the same place as the Clippers right now. They have kind of figured out how to match up with Houston and how to beat them. Because LA has, you know, ever since the second half of game 2, gone to their own kind of small baller lineup. And it's worked. Even though Harden and Westbrook were both at 30 points, I think Westbrook had 30, Harden had 33 in game 3. They still managed to, as a team, outscore Houston because there wasn't a whole lot else happening besides Westbrook and Harden, who was pretty much that Houston Rockets team. So if the Lakers continue with this small ball that essentially has caught Houston off guard the last 2 games, and really it's been the fourth quarter, they've been able to hang with – I mean, Houston's been able to hang with L.A. really throughout the first 3 quarters of Game 2 and Game 3. But when it came to for the fourth quarter of both of those games, L.A. was able to lock down defensively and somehow, you know, work an offensive run into those quarters to open the gap up and win Games 2 and 3. And I don't know how Houston stops that. Because if small ball is beating Houston, they're losing at their own game. And even though, you know, the three-pointer could pick up, because that's the thing. I feel like L.A. is in command of this series, but if Houston comes out and has one of those games where they're just draining it from beyond the arc, they could easily tie this series up at 2. So I was pretty torn with what pick to go with today, and initially I was leaning towards Houston because of that reason. I feel like for 2 games now, in the fourth quarter, their shooting has just gone away, and the way that team goes, it's going to come back, right? But the way LA plays defense, especially the last 2 games, I can't see Houston getting a win right now. Not with the way LA is starting to roll. We saw that in the Portland series. They lost game 1, figured it out and rolled through the rest of the series. They lost game one to Houston, seemed to have figured it out. I think they're going to roll through the rest of the series, which is not initially what I thought this series was going to be like heading into game one, but LA has done a great job just turning it around. So I think it's going to be another close game. It's going to come down to the fourth quarter again, but I just have a feeling that it's not going to change all that much. So I'm going to go with the Los Angeles Lakers today and pick them to open up the series to a 3-1 lead and take a commanding lead over Houston. But that's the road of the NBA right now. When we come back, we'll take a look at the Eastern Conference Finals Game 2 in the world of the NHL that happened last night and talk about Game 3 of the Western Conference Final between Dallas and Vegas that happens today. That's coming to the show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
We had game two of the Eastern Conference Finals last night in the Stanley Cup playoffs between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the New York Islanders. Tampa Bay coming off that strong 8-2 win in game one, where they made good on 3 of 6 power play opportunities and just buried New York through a very strong second period. Game two, a little different. I figured that this game would be a lot closer, as the New York Islanders probably mentally and physically a little worn down from their 7-game series with Philadelphia. Tampa Bay just 5 games against Boston. So that game one win, that game one blowout, was disappointing, but understandable with where both teams were coming from. But game two, again, the Islanders now a day of rest, understanding the team that they're playing, definitely put up more of a fight there with Tampa Bay. In fact, they were off to a really good start. They got a goal in just about 90 seconds into the game after a slick transition play from New York. We saw a cross-ice pass from Cal Clutterbuck to enter the zone. The puck was kind of rattling around behind the net, and Cal Clutterbuck, actually, who was questionable for the game, ended up playing, I think was a huge lift for the Islanders, and played a part in that first goal. Like I said, played the puck across the zone so that the Islanders could get into the Tampa Bay zone to start the attack, and then the puck was kind of rattling around behind the goal, and during that time, Cal Clutterbuck again kind of, forced one of the Tampa Bay defensemen into Andrei Vasilevskiy, who was in goal, and Vasilevskiy kind of, took a little light shot to the head and wasn't able to kind of regain his surroundings in time before Matt Martin was able to lift the puck over his stick side shoulder into the net. And Vasilevskiy did not seem happy about it, but the ref didn't see it, didn't get challenged, goal stood. So it was 1-0 New York there again, just about 90 seconds into the game. So definitely a different feel from the Islanders in game two. And throughout the rest of that first period, I mean, the Islanders were dominating. They were dominating the faceoff circle. They had, I think, at one point, 12 shots to 3 for Tampa Bay. They were showing signs of a totally different team, which, again, I kind of expected coming off that game one loss, probably still recovering from that series with Philadelphia. But Victor Hedman able to even the score up with just about a minute 24 left in the first period off a face-off win. And even though the Islanders won the face-off battle, this was a big one. Tampa Bay won the face-off right back to Victor Hedman. And that has to feel, I mean, I've always thought like catching an alley-oop for a dunk, home run, whether it's a 2-run home run, a 3-run home run, or a grand slam. I mean, there's just some feelings in sports that have to be amazing. I imagine for a defender in hockey, when your team wins a faceoff and the puck comes to you and you just wind up and give it a real hard slap shot, that's got to feel so just empowering. And Victor Hedman had that exact thing happen. His team won the faceoff, came right to him, hard slap shot, kept the puck nice and low. I don't even think it got off the ice, actually. Just skated right down the ice, untouched, off of the post and in. Great shot from Victor Hedman. His 7th of the postseason, that tied it up at 1. That was the score in the first intermission. A very physical and back-and-forth second period that saw both teams get some chances, but some great goaltending from both teams there. It stayed 1-1 through the second period, and that really carried over into the start of the third period as well. feeling like as we're getting closer and closer to the end of this game that it's going to overtime because no one really able to get any kind of solid opportunity. And then just about 20 seconds left, Tampa Bay gets a great entry into the New York zone. Looked as though the puck was going to get put out of the zone. Nice cross ice pass again to Ryan McDonagh, who finds Nikita Kucherov on the backside of the goal, waiting for his shot. Got it, put it in the net with 8 seconds left. Tampa Bay goes up 2-1. And actually, the Islanders got a pretty good chance. I mean, I thought it was over at that point. The Islanders actually got a pretty good chance off the ensuing faceoff. 8 seconds left. New York wins the faceoff. About 2 seconds later, they're in the Tampa Bay zone. And it's a pretty good opportunity there to get a late tying goal to maybe send it to overtime. But not the case. Vasilevsky made a solid save. The puck, again, just kind of held behind the goal for the last 2 or 3 seconds, and Tampa Bay goes up 2-0 in the series. It was the only pick I got right yesterday, but you know what? I did get one, and Tampa Bay now with a commanding 2-0 series lead, but the Islanders definitely looked like that team that we've seen so far this postseason. That 8-2 loss wasn't them, didn't seem like that kind of team, and this seemed way more appropriate for the New York Islanders, the way they played all 60 minutes, especially the way they came out nice and aggressive. That's the kind of team we've seen this playoffs, and definitely looking more like themselves there in game two. Still coming up a little bit short against a Tampa Bay team that lost Braden Point, I want to say either late in the first period or early in the second period. I have it written down here. When did they lose Braden Point? Late in the first period. So late in the first period, they lost Braden Point there. And if Point cannot continue, then Tampa Bay looking at either Mitchell Stevens or Carter Verghy to replace him moving forward if he cannot play. They were also without Alex Killorn, who got thrown out of the game for a hit from behind, which we've seen a couple of those this postseason. They're always pretty nasty, but Alex Killorn left there too. So Tampa Bay down some pieces there, still finding a way to win with their stars, Hedman and Kucherov, and they now have a 2-0 series lead. Although I think game three could be an Islander win, and that could kind of change and really start to dictate this series moving forward. But definitely New York looking like a lot more of a sharper team in game two there, even though they came up a little bit short. But nonetheless, definitely looking more like themselves. But now we get ready for game three of the Western Conference final between Vegas and Dallas. Both teams trading shutout wins. Dallas 1-0 in game one. Vegas 3-0 in game two. Will game three be the time where both teams score? And we see something there. But Dallas going to need to get their mojo back. I mean, the offensive firepower was a bit of a surprise from Colorado, from a team that kind of struggled to score throughout the week. And then, of course, coming out and getting the one goal early in game one, but then failing to get any other goal in that game and failing to score in game two. So this is a Dallas team that, like I said, scored 42 goals in a 10-game stretch. But in this first two meetings against Vegas, they have now gone a stretch of 117 minutes and 24 seconds without a goal in this series. So Vegas, ever since, you know, allowing that early goal in the first period of game one, has shut down Dallas. And which is surprising because they've been a strong defensive team, but really kind of were lacking the discipline there. Like I said, didn't have the organization that we've seen from them, and also just couldn't win a whole lot of faceoffs against Vegas either. So that put them in a tough hole, and they're going to have to be better there because Vegas, ever since becoming an NHL team just a few short years ago, has really prided themselves on having those four lines that can produce. And even though they struggled throughout the series against Vancouver and in game one against Dallas, they showed some life in game two. Their forwards had gone a while without getting anything but an empty net goal, and their forwards got all three goals in game two. So this is a Vegas team that has arguably one of the best goaltending duos. I mean, Robin Lehner now, obviously the starting, the number one goalie there for that team. But Marc-Andre Fleury, I mean, if you could have any goalie as your number two goalie, that's not a bad option to have. So Vegas has that goaltending there to survive this series and make life really tough for Dallas. And they have the offense that, if Dallas isn't careful, could pick them apart like they did in game two. And it's going to be interesting. I mean, the Golden Knights have made life tough for teams throughout. I mean, you know, playing at a fast pace, getting teams to commit penalties and drawing penalties. That's what they've been good at throughout their stay so far in the NHL. So we'll see if Dallas can just get some more pressure. You know, they're going to have to be more disciplined defensively, have better luck in the faceoff circle as well. But on top of all that, you got to produce goals. And, you know, to just be going cold in this series from what they, you know, what we saw in the Colorado series, it's not going to work. You know, like kind of like when we said, the Clippers need more from Paul George. Dallas essentially needs a lot more from all of their forwards. And, I mean, they got good scores on there. Jamie Benn can score. Joe Pavelski can score. I mean, they have obviously some good weapons on that team. They've struggled at times this season, but they are a team that can produce goals. They just have to be a little more. I think their defense could lead to some offense. I think if their defense gets more organized, obviously winning faceoffs will help, but I think if their defense can get back to being that kind of stifling defense that we saw throughout the regular season and at times this playoffs, then offense could follow with that. And, you know, it's I think, going to be a pretty low-scoring series. I mean, I think three games or three goals for a team in a game could be right around the most that is scored. I think 3-1, 3-2, 2-1, those kind of games are what we could see. But I think if you're Dallas, let your defense spark your offense. I think that's the best way for them to go. And for Vegas, I mean, just keep doing what you're doing. Play fast. Try to get Dallas to commit penalties and just start burying down on their goaltenders. I mean, Anton Khudobin, who had a great game one, got pulled in game two, and that's how quickly it can turn when you play a team like Vegas. So we'll see if Dallas can, like I said, be more organized and more disciplined defensively and let that in their face-off circle try to spark that offense there in game three. And I think, again, it will be, I don't think it's going to be a shutout either way. I think both teams are now kind of getting their feet, getting themselves ready in this series. And I think both teams will get on the board tonight. But I do think Vegas makes it two wins in a row and takes a 2-1 series lead over Dallas. That's the pick tonight for game three of that Western Conference final, which, in case you're interested, drops the puck at 5:00. I don't know. I mean, football is going to be on the TV tonight. I may be flipping back and forth between basketball and hockey on my computer, but obviously a lot of focus goes to the NFL, which is where we will go after the break as we get ready for Thursday Night Football, the opening game of the 2020 NFL season. So we'll dive into that. Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, believe it. The NFL season is here. Kickoff has arrived. Physical kickoff in, what, just about 2.5 hours or so. We will have the Houston Texans and the Kansas City Chiefs meeting at Arrowhead to kick off the NFL season. The defending champion Kansas City Chiefs, who did lose at home last regular season to Houston before Kansas City had their incredible playoff comeback at Arrowhead to beat the Texans. So it'll be interesting to see where that series kind of picks up after that. But it should be a really fun game. And you know what? I think we can all just be happy that the NFL season is here. We can hope, and depending on your beliefs, maybe pray, that this NFL season does not have to get canceled, does not see, you know, a handful of games right and left being affected by COVID and all this. You know, I mean, Kansas City having fans there, if local and state governments feel it's okay, we got to trust their decision, but hopefully everyone is smart about it. But hopefully we just get this NFL season in the books, enjoy it, everyone stays safe, and all the games are competitive. I mean, these first few weeks are going to be really interesting. I think from a COVID standpoint, just to see how teams can travel and how that may affect the numbers and the tests or whatnot. But really, these first few weeks are going to be interesting just because we've had no preseason. So teams have had to make cuts just based on practice and inter-squad scrimmages. So it's going to be real interesting just to see how these teams approach these first weeks. I feel like it's going to be one extreme or the other. Either they're going to be real conservative because they don't want to take any major chances as everyone's kind of getting into a rhythm, or they're going to be so just hot and ready to go that they're going to go out firing on all cylinders, taking chances, you know, throwing the ball 40, 50 yards, you know, 30, 40, 50 yards downfield, pulling out some trick plays. I mean, I feel like it's going to be one extreme or the other, and I feel like Kansas City and Houston are going to be more towards that latter extreme. I don't think either of these teams are going to be looking to come out on the slower end of things and the more conservative end of things. I think they're going to be going out there tonight looking to put on an absolute fire show. And I'm looking forward to it. Kansas City 9.5-point favorites in this game. And again, that's just kind of the unknown. I feel like with the games they've had, it could be close. It could come down to one or two possessions. Or if it's going to be a blowout, I feel like Kansas City could be the team to do that. I don't think Houston's blowing out Kansas City. I don't think that the banner ceremony tonight's going to be a big distraction because they already essentially did a celebration. Whether that was last week or the week before, the team with players, staff members, and family had their own banner ceremony. They handed out the rings on that night. So it's not like they're doing all that for the first time today. They have their rings already. I think this is just a banner raising. They're not, you know, usually if you watch the NBA season kickoff or whatever, they get the rings and they do that whole ceremony and then they lift the banner. Guys already have their rings. So I don't think having to wait for that banner ceremony or going through that is going to play any kind of real factor into this game. If anything, I think it could pump the Chiefs up even more. So looking forward to this, and obviously the defending champions in Kansas City going to be looking to come out and make a statement against a Houston team that's going to look a little different there on offense. DeAndre Hopkins obviously going to Arizona, getting a nice extension there, contract extension there. Carlos Hyde also leaving, going to Seattle right now, being a running back for the Seahawks. And those two exits, I think more the exit of DeAndre Hopkins, seemed like something that could really derail the Houston Texans this season. But they brought in Brandon Cooks, although he was listed, I believe, as questionable for the game tonight. But they have him. They have Randall Cobb, along with a healthy David Johnson as well, and a healthy J.J. Watt. And he makes a world of difference for that defense. So if he can stay healthy, and hopefully he can. I mean, I'm not a Texans fan, but I'm a J.J. Watt fan. I like that guy. I like the way he plays. I like the way he carries himself off the field. I just want him to have a season where he stays healthy and can play a full 16 games. Even if he doesn't start all 16, I want him to play in all 16 games. Because I think he deserves it. He's worked hard to stay healthy. He's worked hard to stay in the NFL. Houston has stayed committed to him. I feel like he just deserves to have a season where he can stay fully healthy and contribute to that defense and to that team. But that's what Houston's bringing into this season. I think they have a shot. I mean, I think as of right now, they're my favorites for the AFC South. And I think this is going to be a good jumping off point for them. If they can't get the win against Kansas City, you know, if you can show some good signs. Again, this is essentially kind of your week one slash kind of preseason game. This is kind of your one game to really feel out everything. And because by the time you get to week two, you want to pretty much have, I mean, you're not going to have everything down, but you want your ducks to be a little more in a line, a little more in a row. So as long as they can go out there and get some kind of offensive production, maybe get, you know, slow down that Chiefs offense a little bit. Because as of right now, we just have last year to really go off of. And until Kansas City shows us any reason why they, you know, shouldn't be a favorite to defend that championship, then right now I think they're carrying around that swagger and they deserve it. So I think this is going to be a really fun game between these two teams. And, of course, Deshaun Watson on his nice little contract extension, as is Patrick Mahomes. Both guys getting paid in the offseason. So that should be fun to see those guys come out with that kind of energy as well. And prove that, you know, these are kind of the next generation of QBs now really starting to come into the limelight. Obviously, Mahomes with his Super Bowl ring now. Deshaun Watson looking to get one, but these are two of the quarterbacks of the future. So for them to have grand spanking new deals or contract extensions, it'll be a fun night for them to go out there and just show off why they got those extensions. And I think it's going to be a fun night to watch both those guys, just go to town and do battle. And like I said, I don't think that the Chiefs and that whole banner ceremony is really going to make a difference in the way this game goes. I think it is all about being focused. Andy Reid is going to have that team ready to go. And I think Bill O'Brien will have his Texans ready to go too. I mean, this is really an incredible matchup to get to start the season off. And the fact that both these teams, in my opinion, are favorites to win their division and be playoff-bound teams, the fact that we're getting this week one is pretty awesome, especially since we have other matchups this week that involve some great quarterback duos. Obviously, the Bucs and Saints going up against each other, Brady and Breeze, for the first of two meetings this year. We'll see the Cardinals and Niners, obviously the defending NFC champions, against a little bit of a revamped Arizona Cardinals team. That should be fun. So amongst all of these matchups, to get Houston and Kansas City to start off week one, to start off the season, I really can't wait for it. And again, these teams, Houston looking a little different. Still just can't wait to see what they bring and to see how they combat and really how they kind of manage their strategies throughout the game. You know, as you start to play and as you start to see some pieces fall into place, how do they make adjustments? Because I think the first 3 weeks, two, 3 weeks, you know, it's going to be figuring all those pieces out and figuring out who thrives where. And obviously some of these coaches are going to have an idea of that already, but they haven't had any kind of real game atmosphere this season. That's going to be it's been different for us as fans. I can't imagine what it's been like as players and coaches. But to it and thinking that, it's just going to be a lot of fun. I mean, the Chiefs also, along with a nice big contract extension for Patrick Mahomes, also doled out some other big contracts. Defensive tackle Chris Jones, tight end Travis Kelce, both getting some nice paydays there. And this is a Kansas City team, although they don't have a lot of money left over now, they have weapons to make another run this year. And you got Mahomes for, what, the next 10 years? So, I mean, this is a Kansas City team that I think is right there and ready to start their championship defense with a bang tonight. So I'm going to pick Kansas City to get the win at home. 17,000 fans, banner raising night. Just feels like a night that Kansas City is going to come out. And I don't know if they'll dominate. I could see them doing that. But I think Houston, a championship caliber team, has that talent. So I don't think they're going to get absolutely steamrolled, but I do think Kansas City will have the edge. I think the Chiefs walk away with the victory, and that is how the NFL season gets going. And for what it's worth as well, we're going to have Terry and our pal Sean on the show tomorrow over the phone, but Terry did want me to pass along his Thursday night pick as well. I believe it was the Chiefs, but just let me double check here just in case. Don't want to get his prediction wrong at all. He did. He did take the Chiefs to win tonight. So he's picking the Chiefs. I'm picking the Chiefs. We'll get Sean's reaction from Thursday Night Football tomorrow as well. And we'll also, we'll all give you our playoff teams, our week one picks, and our Super Bowl predictions as well. Terry might even have an MVP prediction set up. So we'll wait to see what he's got in store for us tomorrow. But should be a fun day and should be a fun night of football. And I'm picking once again the Chiefs to get the job done tonight. Although it does hurt me as a Charger fan. Gotta be realistic. But we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we will wrap up the show on this Thursday, September 10th, here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN. To learn more.
Well, as we get ready for the start of NFL season, as NHL and NBA playoffs continue to roll on, some surprising news out of the world of the NBA a few days ago. When Billy Donovan, it was announced that he wasn't going to be returning to Oklahoma City. And that may not have been as surprising if the Thunder had the season that a lot of people expected them to have, struggling and just kind of muddling their way through the Western Conference. But in a conference that has always been deep, or has been deep for the last decade or so, I mean, just had teams right and left that seemed like they could make a run. For them to be fifth in that conference and push Houston to seven games, it seems like Billy Donovan really worked some magic. The team that no one expected anything from turns out to be the fifth best team in the Western Conference. So that was not a coaching vacancy that I think I expected or anybody really expected to be open as their season comes to an end. So, I mean, what will happen with Billy Donovan now? I mean, is he going to look to go back to college? We don't know what the status of college basketball could be this year, so that might be a little bit of a risk. Does he look to maybe the Indiana job or maybe another job opening up in the NBA? I don't know. That's a very surprising move. And the thing is, it's not like initially it said they both parted ways mutually. OKC offered him a 2-year deal, guaranteed, and he did not take it. So it'll be interesting to see who OKC now pursues and where Billy Donovan goes. But not news that I was expecting to see after the season that OKC had. But that's the business sometimes. But that's the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll have our pals Terry and Sean on the show tomorrow over the phone. Our pal Rick will be in here as well. We'll recap Thursday Night Football as well as the NBA and NHL action. We'll give you our NFL season picks. Going to be a fun show tomorrow. Be sure to tune in. Again, my picks today, Lakers, Knights, Chiefs. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Peace.